Night gathers, and now our podcast begins. It shall not end until we're done talking. We are
the princes that were promised.
Hello, welcome to the princes that were promised, the wardens of Long Island, and the watchers on the couch, Sean and John. And we're going to do something a little bit different today. Worst kept secret in fiction, we're talking about the biggest theory out there, as far as John and myself are concerned.
It's not a theory no more.
It's confirmed. And that is R plus L equals J. John, what is the R plus L equals J? For those people that have just come out of a cave. For the last few years.
My favorite topic in the books. If we did a full RLJ podcast, I could probably do 10 episodes just of me and myself talking about
this
it.
This may very well turn into the first of 10 episodes. By the way. Spoiler.
I have a whole lot. I don't even need to look for data. The data bank is all in my head. I know a whole lot, but the R plus L equals J is Rhaegar Targaryen. Who is Daenerys Targaryen's brother, eldest brother, who we didn't know in the show, we have not seen yet, who died at the hands of Robert Baratheon in the Battle of the Trident.
So he dies before the events of A Song of Ice and Fire.
The L is for Lyanna Stark, Eddard Stark's beloved younger sister. Then going back, J stands for Jon Snow.
Right. It was an idea that somebody had, and I believe it was as far back as Game of Thrones, people had this idea of R plus L equals J.
Here's definitely something that's going to go on to something we'll probably talk about a little bit later on, but I'm going to talk about it right now because it's a huge debunker to...
Debunkers?
Yes, to the debunkers, because in a YouTube, I saw on YouTube, I probably other places again, but I saw on YouTube, it was an interview back from January 2014. And this, I'm going to come out and say, it is a safe assumption, I believe, what George is talking about, and I will back it up. But he was talking, the question was raised to George.
Right, I know what you're saying.
Did you ever go on fan sites or message boards when you read these books, or when you were writing these books? And George said, and I'm paraphrasing, but I'm quoting and paraphrasing basically something of what he was saying. He's saying that, you know, back when he first started writing the books, back in 96, when the first book came out, and before the second book came out back in 98, he was on this... I mean, back then on those...
An AOL fan page?
Yeah, or something like that started out and...
The chat room.
Right, and they were talking about a whole bunch of theories, and he was reading this, and he's just reading these theories, and most of them he said, God, they're god-awful, and he stopped himself right there. He didn't want to go on message boards, but you know, or any fan sites or anything like that. He didn't want to have any persuasion or anything getting mixed in his own story
He just wanted to tell his story without any influence.
And because he said this, and this is the big thing, he said that even back then, in 1998, going before the second book came out, that people had already started to guess through all the hints that he had in the first book.
Which aren't that many.
Right. Because that's what I'm going to prove in a couple of why it has to be RLJ.
Right.
Because a lot of this stuff, let me get on to the thing before I get into that. He said people are already starting to guess something that he's going to write in the next book, Winds of Winter, through all the hints he gave out. He's going to reveal in the next book that people had guessed out already before in 1998. So many people already, he had hints in that book of this huge, like of this secret or something that he's going to put out in the Winds of Winter.
Right.
So that's why I think we're all anticipating that in Winds of Winter. We will find out that RLJ is confirmed. If you go back to the first book, because someone can say, oh, that could be anything. In the first book,
what could it possibly be?
The first book, we didn't really get too much of Azor Ahai yet. So it's not as dealing with Azor Ahai.
We don't get Azor Ahai until Clash of Kings.
Right. That's very important. Mm-hmm. And most of the stuff that we do.
Prince of His Promise, same thing.
That he does have in their like reveals and all that have already been answered, except for
like who killed Jon Arryn,
right?
Who
wanted Bran killed?
Right. You know, who wrote the note to Catelyn?
Right. All that has already been answered.
Right.
The RLJ has not been answered yet.
Right.
So already then, and George has been very quiet on there, so he was definitely watching his words very carefully when he was saying that. He didn't come out and say, well, here's a reveal that I'm going to reveal. He didn't say, but all signs point to RLJ.
You brought up a good point with the years these books came out. If you read A Song of Ice and Fire, which I hope you had if you were listening to our podcast, there, it's amazing world building, amazing colorful characters. Just every page just kind of leaks into your head, and you can visualize what he's writing so well. So these books have a lot of repeat value.
Mm-hmm.
And I myself, I've read these books, I've read them three times through. I have them all on audio CD and I've listened to them. I don't even know how many times. When I used to drive an hour to work every day, I'd just be listening to the auto CDs back and forth for years. There's a lot of repeat value. So while waiting for his next book to come out, and granted there wasn't a long wait between Game of Thrones, Clash of Kings, wasn't a long wait between Clash of Kings, Sword of Swords, but then you start having these long waits.
Right.
People that had been with him since the beginning reread and reread and reread, waiting for a new book. That's the nature of the Song of Ice and Fire fandom, is mm-hmm. rereading, looking.
Because there's so much material. There's so many like, underlining things. What's amazing, there's so many underlining things that one person can say, oh, this is what this means. And I could read that even a couple times through and be like, no, I think that means this character or something. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of underlying statements and lines and right. dialogue in there that you have to, you know, catch on a second time. And with all this time in between books, you can go back and reread, especially the first book, and reread all those little things that you might not have caught.
And you do catch them on the second read. And you catch more on the third read. Every time I read them, every time I listened, I did catch something new, even if it was something real minor. But usually the major stuff, you catch that on your second time through, you catch the major stuff. And then once you start communicating with the rest of the fandom and reading things that the rest of the fandom have to say on the internet, it's like a whole new world beyond the books, of just between the lines of the books.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff that's not written, you can write 7 books about that, the things that aren't written. So R plus L equals J was really the starting of all this, all the theories. It's the most popular, it's been around the longest.
The most supported, there's so the most many supported. Things support.
And there's countless, if you go to Westeros.org being a...
It's like page 170, yeah. They have countless theories.
Right. It's a forum for fans, and mm-hmm. they have, people start forums all the time, R plus L equals J version 176, with new proof as to why it works. However, there has been a community growing in the last few years, I would think since, I guess, Feast for Crows, maybe the longer waits, there's an anti-R plus L equals J community mm-hmm. growing, saying that R plus L does not equal J. They've read the book so many times now that maybe they've read it too many times and they're coming up with theories the opposite of that. R plus L equals D. N plus A equals D.
Or B plus A. That's the latest one is B plus Brandon plus Chardane equals J.
Equals John. Or you said something about Brandon and somebody equals Rob. Like, just all these different theories. And you can make a case for any theory that you want. These are huge books of text where the characters involved don't even know what's what some of the time. You know, they just hear stories second hand.
Mm-hmm.
So you can make a case for any of it. But as far as what R plus L equals J is, it means Rhaegar plus Lyanna equals Jon. And it's the grandfather of all Song of Ice and Fire theories. Really the grandfather of, as far as I'm concerned, just internet fandoms. I can't think of one bigger than Song of Ice and Fire. And like Supernatural has a huge internet fandom. I really can't think of any that compare to Song of Ice and Fire, and R plus L equals J is what really started all that. So that's what it is. It means Rhaegar plus Lyanna equals Jon. Why does Game of Thrones prove that this theory is true?
They've had so many subtle hints, and a lot of people still don't even find those subtle hints that the show's done.
The show and the books.
Right.
Between the two, there's been subtle hints, but the show is now a retelling, an adaptation of what we already read. So we're seeing it through new eyes, especially the first few seasons.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing it through new eyes. Before HBO began production on Game of Thrones, before they picked up David Benioff and D.B. Weiss, their show, Weiss and Benioff needed George R. R. Martin to sign off on the project, to sell them the rights to make a TV show out of his books. This meeting's been talked about quite a few times.
By both D&D and George.
They said yes to the deal. They were going to adapt his books. When it became obvious that they were going to possibly most likely catch up with his books and surpass them, they met again.
2014 or was it 13?
I think it was 2013. It might have been 2012, but I think it was 2013.
No, I think it was 2013, but if not 14. It might have been 13 that they had that meeting in Arizona or Phoenix or New Mexico.
It was when the show was doing well and getting better, and it seemed like they really was going to finish it. Because there was a lot of worry when the show first started that it would be like Rome and not finished, or Deadwood and not finished. Like these kind of expensive productions, not enough viewers. But it had viewers and was gaining viewers, and it was going to be finished. They met with Martin again to kind of go over what happens at the end with all these characters in case there's not a book to adapt from. But that first meeting, the one they sold him on this television project to give away the rights to his baby, who he's been working on for years, he asked them a question after they presented the project to him. He asked them a question.
Who is Jon Snow's mother?
And they don't say who they said, but they say that they...
We gave an answer, and George smirked and gave them the permission to do the show.
He didn't confirm.
Didn't confirm.
Or deny.
So a lot of people, again, the debunkers will say, well, he could have just said, okay, they gave a valid answer. It was still wrong, but they allowed him to do the show because he, you know, he thought it was good enough for them to do the show. D&D... In another interview, a few years later, after they met for lunch, it was actually maybe a few years ago, actually.
This is after they met the second time.
They did an interview, and it's on YouTube. I wish I can give you that. You know, I have to look through on YouTube which one it is.
Well, we'll find the link, and we'll tweet it and put it on Facebook.
And Dan Weiss actually came out and said that George confirmed that they got it right. They got the... Because they were asked. They were asked about the question.
He confirmed that they got it right at the first meeting or the second?
The first meeting. Okay. The answer they gave him about John's mother was right.
Okay.
So that debunks the whole, the smirk could mean anything. They got the answer right of who John's mother is.
And what did they do this past season?
They showed you that it was Lyanna Stark.
Ah. So in addition to this interview, because this is just what Benioff and Weiss are saying, George R. R. Martin has been silent on R+L=J since John said, since he never commented on it, but he read about it early on.
The only slip-up that he might have gotten was years ago, maybe late 90s, early 2000, in an interview, he was talking about who was naming, you know, since we have like Dany and like Tyrion, for example, who named them since their, you know, mothers died because of pregnancy. He came out and he said, well, more than likely, you know, it's possible that, you know, mothers were allowed to name the baby, before childbirth or during childbirth or, you know, immediately after the birth. And that Dany's mother had named her Daenerys. Tyrion's father
named him Tyrion.
Tywin named him Tyrion.
Right.
And then he said on John, he said, and Ned named him John. Didn't say
John's father. Right.
So that, in a way, was a calculated little subtleness that...
You know what? With all the scrutiny that Martin's under, and he's under a lot of scrutiny, everything he says about A Song of Ice and Fire is analyzed and
right. So like
torn apart.
The old adage, there's like a website, or there's on Westeros.org, is so spake... Back
and so,
Martin.
So spake Martin.
Anything he says is true. If he doesn't want to give you an answer, it means it's too much of a spoiler.
Right.
He doesn't want to give it away. But if he says something, that means it's true.
Right. And he's asked a lot of questions about his series.
Right. So when he says that, you know, well, I'm not going to get it. Well, John and Danny are 8 or 9 months apart. They're 8 months apart because some people try to twist when he possibly could have been. But I'll get on to the debunking of that.
Right,
because John was way too older than what he looked like when he came to Winterfell. That would happen.
We're going to do some debunking in the next segment, but I wanted to comment on George R. R. Martin's support for HBO's Game of Thrones, because if these guys didn't know the main mystery of his series, I don't think he would sign off on them doing it, because he passed on movie deals, which would have made him rich. We're talking one of the past podcasts about the Lord of the Rings trilogy and their success, and then the boom of
medieval science fiction and mythological fantasy.
Right, starting with Lord of the Rings. And A Song of Ice and Fire was a result of the success of Lord of the Rings. George could have made a lot of money doing movies, and he could have half-assed it. We could have a movie trilogy about John's adventure at the Wall, and just make John the only character. He goes to the Wall, fights the others, goes back to Winterfell, saves his family. You make a movie out of that part of Song of Ice and Fire. But George Martin isn't one to, it's hard to say with parts of season 5 and season 6 in mind, but George Martin isn't one to hurt his story in favor of selling it for the highest price. Whatever Game of Thrones has become on HBO, when it started out, it was a really good adaptation of the books, and George R. R. Martin believed in what they were doing. If they didn't know what R plus L equals J was, I don't think he would have thought that they had a good understanding of his story, and I don't think that he would have signed off on them making a story out of it. Because he could have said no to them and then done the same thing down the line. It's not like the story would have never been picked up. We were talking off air about Hollywood and the lack of original ideas. It's all remakes. It's all comic books. If Benioff and Weiss don't make Game of Thrones, somebody else will offer him, and maybe they have a better understanding of his story. So it wasn't about the money. For him, it's about who can properly tell his story.
I think he even said at one point that someone, when he was talking to the movie deals, that he was upset at those guys, whoever it was, were just going to concentrate like on a John and Danny movie or something.
Right.
And like George's like, there's more to it than just John and Danny.
Right. You could do that,
but you're going to have to, you're shortcutting the whole entire, so many important facets of the story then.
He needs a TV show that will introduce non-book readers and make them want to read the books. And seasons 1, season 2, season 3 did that. These books blew up once HBO started airing Game of Thrones. Later seasons, people pretty much caught up. Nobody's coming into Game of Thrones now and then going to go and read the books. That was for the first few years. George R. R. Martin is an executive producer, which I'm sure is part of the deal, but he also wrote episodes for the first first four. He's not going to do that for a show that he doesn't believe in, for showrunners that he doesn't think have a handle on his material. He's not going to do that. He's not that kind of guy. He's got a million other projects. Granted, we don't think he can say no to anything he's asked.
Yeah, he likes saying yes.
Yeah. It doesn't seem like he can say no to projects, but he can. He worked in TV before. He was a writer. He got a job in TV. He wrote for The Twilight Zone.
Beauty and the Beast.
An anthology story like The Twilight Zone, but the Beauty and the Beast was a head writer on, and he left Hollywood. He left TV because he wanted to tell
more control.
Yeah, and he wanted to be able to tell a story that weren't constrained by budgets.
Right.
Which he definitely did. George R. R. Martin's support for Benioff and Weiss and the show makes me believe that they are correct in their guess to what R plus L equals J was. And I didn't know that he confirmed that.
Yeah, he did.
You're telling me that?
I gotta find it.
All the more. Are they gonna lie about that? I don't think they're gonna lie about that. George Martin, admittedly, is tight-lipped about it because at this point, he doesn't talk much about Game of Thrones. Because at this point, it's a question of, is he gonna support the show? Because he's writing the same story. You know, it's almost like a competition at this point. But it's all money for him at the end of the day. So we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back, and John's going to tell us about what exactly happened in HBO's Game of Thrones that proved this theory. So we'll be right back. The Princes That Were Promised is brought to you by Audioboom. Download the Audioboom app now for your iPhone or Android mobile device and search for The Promised Princes. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/thepromisedprinces. You can find us on Twitter at Promised Princes. Thank you for listening. All right, we're back. You know nothing, Jon Snow. the key scene in A Song of Ice and Fire that supports Arpels, Elegules, Jetty has to be the Tower of Joy, yeah, right?
Ned's fever dream.
Right. There's others. There's definitely others. But Ned dreams an old dream. So this is a dream he's had in the past. And it turns out to be something that has really happened. Because he says, as it had been life, so it was in the dream.
Right.
Basically, he's riding towards the Tower of Joy with the red mountains of Dorne in the background. And it's so poetic and well-written, this dream. And he comes upon three knights of the Kingsguard who are...
Sir Joe Hightower, mm-hmm. Sir Arthur Dayne, and Sir Ozzel Went.
So are these the Mandan Mor?
No, these are no jabronis. Right. These, what I really think has to be said is when Rhaegar and Lyanna first went to the Tower of Joy, they were accompanied only by Arthur Dayne and Ozzel Went.
Okay.
Okay. Sir Joe Hightower was ordered by King Aerys to find his son Rhaegar, to tell Rhaegar that Rhaegar had to lead the Targaryen army against Robert's army.
Okay.
What is very key in my mind, and I think even book readers overlook this, is a man like Sir General Hightower, an old stickler to the rules of succession, of heirship, of being where he should be.
Which pretty much that entire Kingsguard was.
For Jarrah Hightower to be there, to stay there at the tower, means a lot. Because some can argue, well, Arthur Dayne was like best friend, and so Ozzel was a good friend with Rhaegar, that they were just following Rhaegar's instructions.
Which was mentioned
they were
in the text.
Because they were biased towards Rhaegar. But for Jarrah Hightower, man of the stickler for the rules of laws of succession, to stay at that tower means a lot.
It means
everything. Why wouldn't Arthur, no, not Arthur, excuse me, Jarrah Hightower be like, all right, guys.
The king.
We still have Kingsguard, other, we still have, you know, we have to go back and protect the king.
Arthur, right? Dayne, you stay here. Here's like 50 men.
Yeah, I'm leaving. I'm leaving back to protect my king. Yeah. He stays at the Tower of Joy while all this is going on. And it's a good segue now into what I'm going to say about the Tower of Joy sequence in the book. The question that Ned...
Well, before you do that, let's... The Tower of Joy in the book, they come upon these three members of the Kingsguard, and a battle
ensues. We're outside waiting for them.
We're outside waiting for them, like they know they're coming.
Right.
They're sharpening their swords, getting ready for battle.
And I also want to add, it's not mentioned in the text. Obviously, you can say Robert was injured. But Ned Baratheon was injured. So maybe he couldn't come. But it's not even mentioned in the text that you would think Ned would be like, would send a raven, I'm going to the Red Mountain and Dorne, Robert, I found Lyanna. I also believe that Ned was also warned.
Knew what he was coming into.
Didn't want to believe it. Knew that Lyanna might was with child.
Okay.
Because, okay. Hey, how does Ned know where Lyanna is? Because he goes at the King's Landing and he storms over the King's Landing. He goes to lift the siege of Storm's End. Maybe I'm wrong, but I know. I like to think deep down that if Ned found out at the King's Landing where Lyanna was, he's not going to Storm's End. He's going to get his sister, because that's the type of man Ned is. But he goes to Storm's End first.
And lifts the siege.
Then goes.
He wraps up the entire war.
Yeah, within like one
day. And then goes to get Lyanna.
Right.
Well, yeah, I mean, it seems
he would have gone, I think, I just firmly believe that he would have gone to Lyanna first. She's family. That's my belief.
I might agree with you, but I also think that he would do his duty first. Although
Robert
was not yet king. He had just become king.
Right. He wasn't announced yet. At the time that Ned leaves, he was not announced yet, because they still lived at Storm's End, and he was not announced yet as king. My point is, I believe that Ashar Dayne was the one who told Ned where Lyanna was also the one that told her brother Arthur Dayne that be on the lookout, Ned is coming, because they're waiting outside. Like, they knew they were coming.
Yeah.
Like, they knew, like, Ned was going to be there.
There's
no surprises there.
No.
They're not like, oh my God, guys, Ned Stark's here, let's go. Come on, Ozzel, let's go.
Everybody knew
what what was going on.
And what happens is Ned rides up with
six of his trusted friends, which my point is, not Robert, and nor does he even give out any word to Robert that he knows where Lyanna is.
It's all Northmen.
Yeah.
All Northmen.
It's no one that can go back to Robert, because makes you really think that Ned knew that there was a possibility of a Targaryen baby there or something.
Yeah.
Something was there. He knew he could not tell Robert, because he has to find out for him. He's got to see this for himself.
Yeah.
Well, he had to think that was an option. Even if he didn't know that there was a baby, he had to think that there could
be something there. Because then we go into the line of questioning that Ned brings to the Kingsguard. He says the questions he asks are all relative to the Kingsguard. Questioning the Kingsguard's motives why they're there and not with
the king, the prince.
Or his heir, or the heirs, back at King's Landing. Why aren't they? He mentions first the Battle of the Trident.
Right.
And, the Kingsguard responds, "We were not there. Or woe to the usurper, we have been."
Right.
This tells us that the Kingsguard knows that Rhaegar died. They know that because
they know the robber killed him.
Right. And they know that if they were there, that would not have happened. They would have stepped in to fight for Rhaegar and they would have killed Robert.
Right.
If they were there.
And you believe him when they say this.
Right. And I believe that. I believe if Arthur Dayne was there, "I'm sorry, Robert Baratheon, he's going to beat you."
Right.
So then, after he talks about Rhaegar, why weren't they at the Trident? He then switches his former questioning, "Why weren't you at King's Landing?
When your brother Jaime Lannister slew your king."
And they say, we are far away.
Or else our false brother
would burn in seven hells and Aerys would yet still be king.
Right.
So again, they know that Aerys is dead.
Yeah. They know Jaime killed him.
Right. So they know all this information. So they're not blinded. They're not like, "Oh, we don't, oh my God. Why weren't we there?
In the middle of nowhere. Mounds of Dorne."
Right.
They're not, they know exactly what's going on in the realm.
So they
And again, you believe them. If they were there, Jaime wouldn't have killed Aerys.
He would have been done that, but Jaime wouldn't have killed himself.
Right.
He's not going to take on Arthur Dayne, also one at Churchill Hightower, 1-on-3, and come out of that alive.
No, definitely not. And probably not even one of them at that point. Yeah. He's still a kid.
Yeah. They have to know that
Aegon
also has to be probably associated with this. They have to know that information also. Ned then brings up the siege of Storm's End. How come? Okay, you weren't there with your prince. You weren't there with your king. Well, maybe you should be fighting with the Targaryen army. Why weren't you at Storm's End? And, well, we weren't there.
Yeah.
We don't flee. They mentioned a lot of key words there. We don't flee. We don't flee, right. We take a vow. We don't flee from that vow.
We swore an oath.
Right. And then the biggest one, the biggest question, Ned, now he's at a list before we have the battle. Okay, I've asked you about Rhaegar.
You weren't with the king. You weren't with the prince. You weren't with the Targaryen loyalists trying to take down the usurper's castle.
Right. Sir William Dary has taken, your queen, and at this point, Prince Viserys.
Right.
And at this point,
it fled.
Rhaegella was pregnant with Dany, and
fled from Dragonstone.
How come you didn't go with the next heir then? If Aerys is dead, Rhaegar's dead, Aegon's dead, the next heir then would be, this is the biggest one.
Viserys
would be the next heir. And their line is, "Sir William is a good man and true, but not of the King's Guard. The King's Guard does not flee then
or now.
Right. So Arthur Dayne dons his helm. Then that's the last question he can ask. Ned now has to actually gets a confirmation. Okay, I've gone through all these things. Yeah. Why weren't you there with your heirs? And
the Kingsguard is saying, we took a vow. We're following our vow. We're where we're supposed to be. Even though the king is killed, the prince is killed,
his heir is killed,
Targaryen army that could have taken the usurper's castle, that's failed. Those four major things that have now ended this war.
Next, you would think the possible heir of Viserys, we're not with him.
Right.
We're right here. We are taking our vow right here. That, to me, confirms that Jon is legitimate, because they would not be there for Lyanna.
Right. Well, it confirms before we were able to put Jon as the baby in the tower, it confirms that
there was a king, a prince, a legit heir at that tower, that they believed in to fight for.
It's so poetic, just the way Ned speaks, the way the Kingsguard speaks, the confidence of the Kingsguard that they're doing the right thing, that they're at peace, that they may die here and now, that they're at peace, that even though the king they are sworn to protect, they weren't there for him to die, they weren't there for his son, who was much loved throughout the realm, Rhaegar Targaryen, they weren't there for him, they weren't even there for his younger brother and sister. But they're still confident in that they're following their vow,
right? And that they're sowing. Have you sowed the belief in with this child that they took that stand to protect that child,
right?
And follow their oath and their vows for that child.
Furthermore, protect this child whose mother is Ned's sister.
This is Ned's sister.
Protecting the child from Ned.
A lot of people bring up, well, why do they fight? Well, through the Kingsguard's eyes, they're looking at Ned as Robert's right-hand man.
Right.
They already know that Robert killed Rhaegar. They already know that, you know, now the Lannisters are associated with Robert. They killed, you know, Jaime killed Aerys. And they know that they killed the children. Right. That's very important. They know that the children are being killed. So, what's Ned going to do? Ned's going to take this baby back to Robert. Robert's going to have the baby killed.
Right.
Do they probably know that Eddard's are, you know, a respectable kid, but they can't trust. They're not going to.
Well, how would they know much about Ned at all?
Right.
He's the Lord of Winterfell right now, but
he's young.
He's never ruled from Winterfell. He's
right. Good point. Good point.
You know, so they know. They know Rickard Stark. They may know Brandon
They can't trust that over their vows to protect. Their vows become over more than assumptions.
Right.
So then, well, why would Ned fight the Kingsguard? I mean, he doesn't want to. He knows these guys are honorable men, but he's trying to get to his sister.
Right.
And
they're trying to protect the prince.
Who's right.
With his sister. And whether he's honorable or not,
they're all taking sides.
Their vows.
They don't want to fight. I don't think they really all want to fight each other, but
they have to.
It's
a fucking shame.
Their beliefs abide them to. It's kind of like
their honor.
It's kind of like what Brienne said to Jaime this past season. You know, as my honor on defending Sansa Tully, that I will, if we come up, you know, if you storm that castle, you're my enemy. I have to defend that honor.
Yeah.
And that's why they fight.
Right. And the fight is tough, and everybody dies except for Ned and Howland Reed, and he says that he wouldn't have survived if not for Howland Reed. He doesn't say it during his fever dream, but he says it
later on, I think.
Yeah. Bran remembers his father saying that he would not be alive if not for Howland Reed, and how important Howland Reed is to him. Which they don't really explore too much in the show. And we'll get to the show's version of Tower of Joy in a second. But from the battle, Arthur Dayne says, now it begins, and Ned says, no, now it ends.
They came together in a rush of steel and shadow. Right. They started fighting. You hear Lyanna screaming, Lord Eddard, you know, promise me, Ned, promise me. And then it says, Leah, I promise. So that's what we know. Obviously, you know, we know that Lyanna made Ned promise him something.
Right. So you think about it rationally, right? You think about it as somebody who doesn't want it to be, or doesn't know who Jon Snow is. Take, for example, people that watch the show and figured out that Jon Snow is Lyanna's son. It's not painfully obvious, but it's there's nothing else that it could be.
Right.
I don't think people come up with reasons, and next time we will talk about it. But the second time I read that, it was obvious to me.
Mm-hmm.
I think the first time I read it, I didn't think too much of it. I wondered who Jon Snow's mother was. I knew Ned had promised Lyanna something, but I think I burned through the book so quick, I didn't really think too much of Ned's promise after a Game of Thrones, because Ned's not in it anymore. Nobody's talking about the promise he kept. That's all in the first book. Which, by the way, was originally planned to be the first book of a trilogy.
So there's a lot more information in that first book, and as the books have gone on, it's been...
Well, more information.
Information, but the bigger reveals have been a little bit slower in contrast. We get a whole lot of stuff, and then all of a sudden it dwindles a little bit. We get a little bit there, especially in connections to RLJ.
Right.
They go, obviously, because Ned's dead also kind of, like, you know, slows the pace down with that, but even some of the other little... turns, the blue flower grew from a chink of a wall of ice. Those are fewer and far between as the books go on.
Right. Tower of Joy and Game of Thrones.
TV show.
Definitely, they made some changes. I didn't like the changes they made because I still think that scene is the crux of A Song of Ice and Fire, and I think that it's the crux of Game of Thrones too, of Game of Thrones also. I think
we talked about
cornerstone.
Six verse two just kind of ruins it for me. Like, really? You couldn't just do 7:3? The dialogue is much different. Prince Rhaegar, is one of the only thing I did like out of that dialogue, I like Sir Arthur Dean. I like his performance. The only thing I did like is when Ned said, looks up at the tower, where's my sister? And then that's when Sir Arthur Dean puts on the helmet and he knows that it's go time. That's right. The only thing I really did like out of that first Tower of Joy TV show part one.
Right.
That was really the only thing I did. Like, obviously, I mean, the fighting scene was cool. It was, you know, it was a good, nice, you know.
It was, except for nobody can use two swords at once. But besides that,
they're trying to make Arthur Dean look right. Like,
you could have done that with one sword. Either way, they do have Dawn, which you pointed out to me. I didn't notice the first time I watched it. Ned defeats him. Helen Reed comes from behind and cuts his neck, and then Ned stabs him
with Dawn.
And then he takes Dawn and he runs up the stairs.
He hears a woman screaming.
Right. And then he thinks he hears Bran.
Yeah, and then Bran starts running, Father!
And then
he turns around. And then, like, the biggest, you know,
the Third Eye Raven wakes him
up. It's like, you idiot! And you're not going to win best, you know, guest starring actor now.
Yeah. Last episode of the season. So that was episode two or three?
Three.
Last episode of the season. Bran finally
goes to the Heart Tree, and
he feels it's time to finish that dream. He's the Three-Eyed Raven now, so he uses the weretree.
So conveniently there by that place off by Benjen.
Yeah.
Left to die.
All right, listen, if you can leave me without a horse, can you at least drive me up to the weretree so I can see what's going on with my dad? I'm not going to ask you, by the way. Hey, do you know what happened to your sister and
yeah, you don't have dad? In that tower? What was in the tower? Yeah. What's in that tower?
Just
quick sidebar, which when I first saw that, you know, when Bran said, what's in the tower? My first thought was the movie Seven, what's in the box? And I saw other people come up with that same thing. It's like, great, it wasn't just me who thought about that. What's in the box?
What's in the box? What's in the box?
So I thought, I was like, wow, that's really good. At least it wasn't just me.
Yeah. What's in the tower? What's in the tower? Uncle Benjen. So Bran hooks up with the Weirwood Network again. Mm-hmm. He goes right back to that same spot where Ned is running into the tower.
And he doesn't save Paul this time, but Ned still turns around, though. So it's almost as if, well, he's always going to turn around now. That scene now, he's always going to be like...
Right. Right. Which I still don't quite grasp the time travel aspect of the Weirwood.
No.
I mean, I understand that he can go back and see what the Weirwood sees. And I guess being part of the Weirwood, he can take place in those events, but I don't understand the changing of time, the changing of events that happened. You can say it always happened, but it happened because he was there, so he was always there, so are other versions of Bran, or Bran has always been, I don't know.
Yeah, it's getting to be.
I'll accept it. Fine, I'll accept it. Ned enters the room, and there's Lyanna on the bed. There's a few handmaidens.
Two handmaidens. Key thing is and I noticed this on the first viewing, he leaves Dawn by the bedside.
Right.
You've said it, and I believe in it. And just like in the books, we've been mentioning the books too, but definitely in the show too. If something's there, and they show you something in particular or something,
it's there for a reason.
It's for a reason.
Right.
And I just have to think that sword being there and just being conveniently rested, you know, falling down, but not falling, you know, off the bed still, and it's still there holding up. That's important. That sword is important.
This is true for films created by good filmmakers, television created by good TV people. If it's on the screen,
if that sword was
it's
important,
supposed to be there, it's there, you know, for a reason.
Doesn't even run over there with it. He just throws it down, and that's it.
Right.
The sword is there for a reason, and then we see that Lyanna is there in a bed of blood, just how it is in the books, and she was dying in a bed of blood.
I don't recall blue roses, though.
No, they didn't put the blue roses there, but in the books, there is blue, you know.
You remember the blue roses.
There is rose petals, you know, there is rose petals in the in her bed, and, you know, that Rhaegar, supposedly. I mean, 5 months later, these roses were still alive somehow, but it was said that Rhaegar had left before he left, you know, for the Triumph with some roses, I believe. And we didn't really care too much for part one too much, but I really like part two.
I like it too.
I really like the words that Lyanna was saying. With the key word that I really love, and I think a lot of even book readers don't really catch up on it, is when she says that she wants to be brave.
Right.
I think that's key to her character. Lyanna was a very strong-minded, willful.
She is brave. She's a brave woman. But in death, knowing that you're dying,
she's like, now she feels that she's weak, that she isn't brave,
and she's leaving behind a baby.
Right.
And she can't take care of it.
Right.
And she wants to be brave because she knows that she's dying, and it is sad, and it is a really good line, especially if you know character Lyanna, which, unfortunately, we didn't get that from Game of Thrones. We had a couple good scenes with her that kind of
right.
gave a
maybe
character.
Next year we might see some more stuff.
I would hope that we would. I would think we would.
I would see it. I think Taron Harrenhal will be coming, I think, next year.
Okay.
Where we see the Rhaegar Lyanna connection there. We see some sort of bonding there, and right. whatever. That's for another topic.
That said, at that moment, that line, it's effective, especially for a guy like you
yeah.
and me, knowing
who know, cause I,
more about Lyanna and,
right.
and what she...
Right, it's a very good line. Whether it's even said in the books, but it's a good line for the show to use to at least give homage to the character in the books, that, you know, she wants to be brave. You know, she said, you know, I don't want to die. So it's like, you know, she doesn't want to die. It's good that they point these things out and, like, you know, that's there, you know.
Well-written scene.
Yeah, you're not going to die, you know, it's there. You know, give her some water, you know. Chicken soup can work for Arya. Yeah. You know, we get some water right now. We can stop
this.
She'd
be good, because she just gave birth and she got stabbed. But,
you know, is there a maester? Obviously, there's no maester there. Obviously, we're at this tower. They, you know, they...
Why was there no maester there?
You would think Rhaegar would take him. You know, I guess, you know, you can't look... I don't know. Whatever. In the case, there was no maester there. And then, you know, Lyanna's pleading, you know, Ned, no water, listen to me. Because now she knows she's done. She's got to come out now. She's got to say this now because she knows her last breaths are coming.
Well, finish what you're saying, then I have a couple questions.
Okay. Yeah. And then she starts whispering. It definitely appears the first whisper you hear is, like, his name is, but it's very tough to make out.
Right.
And we
purposely so.
Right.
So, like, you turn the volume all the way up, you still can't hear.
You still can't hear. A lot of... We'll go on a little bit later, you know, a couple minutes, maybe, possibly what she's saying there. But then, you know, so if you're still in the shadow, what's going on, the next line, and there's still people actually believe that Robert's the father somehow, the next line is, Robert will kill him. You know he will. You have to protect him. And when she says you have to protect him, that's when the sadness really fills me up, because that's where, you know, my knowledge of Eddard Stark and what he does to keep this promise. You know, promise me, you know, yada, yada, yada. Like, he does protect him. Like,
he does.
It's just, you know, you hear the baby crying and the music, Ramin Djawadi, great music.
They put the baby in Ned's hands.
You know, and Ned's, you know, he's looking at Lyanna, like, he's realized when he's got it, you know, like, this burden's been put on me. He starts crying.
Yeah.
You know.
His sister's dead.
Yeah, the baby they got, I mean, I don't know where they got this baby from, but those eyeballs, they look like Kit Harington's eyes. I don't know what they did. They look,
Might have known they were going to make this when Kit Harington was born, and they were going to cast him and took a shot of him with the baby. I don't know, but yeah.
And then, you know, the fade, and I'm going to talk about the fade a little in our next segment a little bit. Because I think that...
But that's an awesome 1-2 punch to see that scene fading into Jon Snow, his scene, and what happens with him, which let's not get into, because it's maybe we can get into it later depending on time, but just sticking to the Tower of Joy itself, I have a couple questions for you.
Okay.
All right. So listen, they did a great job with Tower of Joy part 2, part 1, you know, we had some problems with, but for both scenes, meaning the show, HBO's Game of Thrones, and for George R. R. Martin's Song of Ice and Fire, both Tower of Joy scenes, does Lyanna know that Ned's coming for her? Because if she's that close to death, she must be holding out for him.
Now remember in the dream, Lyanna cries out to Eddard. So she must know. I'm going to say yes, because if the Kingsguard know that he's coming, they probably said, listen, your brother's coming.
They could say that, or maybe one of the handmaidens saw some men rode up. Some men are riding up, and
I'm going to safely assume that she knew that she was she was definitely outside, because you know she's screaming from a tower, Eddard, like, right. Oh, it sounds like my brother's voice, Eddard.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'd have to, you know. And in the show, you can also pick. Yeah, she might have known about it, but she also knows she might have to know, like, Arthur Dayne's a badass, and when she see, like, oh my god. You did live that, are you? I don't know, how is that really you?
Right.
Another good line. I want to go to real quick before I can get.
Yeah, no, we get to. We're good.
Real quick, another good line in that part 2 is a little shot back to the Tower of Joy dream is Lyanna says to him, "Is this a dream? No, it's not a dream." It's a little connection that in the book it is a dream, and he's saying it's not a dream. So
depending on from what I've been thinking about filming that scene. Much like the Red Wedding.
I'm sure they've been thinking about this for years. Right. Like, this is because they know how important that is.
Yeah.
It's just too important for it not to be different.
Yeah. And they, you know what, overall they did a good job with it. And, you know, if they don't touch on the character of Lyanna, if they don't touch on Rhaegar, they still did a good job, but I think it'll be even better once we see next series and see them have Rhaegar and a younger
Lyanna. I'm going to assume there's going to be a Rhaegar in the next one.
There'd have to be, just to flesh that out, because if you think about it, and you talked about this in our Watchers on the Couch epilogue podcast, you said that Benioff and Weiss kind of gave George another little mulligan here. They revealed some stuff. Even R plus L equals J, they revealed that, but not all the way. Not who John is, if he's legit. So for all the audience knows, Lyanna's his mom, and Rhaegar's his dad. But were they in love? They don't really answer that.
Yeah. But I think...
Were they married? He's still a bastard. You know what I'm saying? Like, they won't answer everything.
So hopefully, you know, you kind of hope maybe this next book wins, weren't there? Some of that stuff actually could be confirmed more through George's writing.
Well, I would think that George, when he reveals it, he's going to reveal all of it at once. And I would assume he's going to reveal it the same way through Bran. Maybe part through Bran, through John.
I think Bran definitely in the book will have some sort of weird thing. It would be found out through Bran, I think. Definitely the reader will.
Well, we talked about how George has a character do something or able to do something. For example, Varamyr Sixskin's warding. For example, and this is the point I'm trying to make, Bran in Dance with Dragons seeing the past, the Weirwood, being at Winterfell, seeing a woman and a man, you know.
Right. I'm going to ask you a question after you're done.
And seeing some children playing in the pool. Then we have Jon being stabbed, but we can think back to Varamyr Sixskins, and we know that Jon is a warg, so if Varamyr Sixskins can do that, then Jon can warg into Ghost and still be alive, technically.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If Bran can go into the past and see all these things happening at Winterfell, and he can cheat through any Weirwood tree, why can't he go into the past and see what happens at the Tower of Joy through a Weirwood tree? So I think that's how you know it is Bran, because George R. R. Martin set it up by showing you that Bran can see.
And I think the thing that's going to confirm the wedding is actually going to be definitely through Bran, is because Bran's going through a Weirwood tree, and he's going to go, where else do we know there's a Weirwood tree? In the God's Eye. And that's probably where Rhaegar and Lyanna got married. And they can see, and he can see, and it'll probably be like, you know, oh my God, you see a silver-haired guy with this girl that looks like Arya, and it's going to be like, oh, ding, 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 getting married, and that's going to be the confirmation that they were married.
Yeah.
Which I hope. I hope it is. Just like, please, shut these people up.
There's got to be something along those lines. But yeah, we're gonna get to the debunkers. I had a couple of the questions with Tower of Joy and what you thought of it. One of them, I mean, I asked you, kind of off the top of my head, why there were no maesters there, and I'm sure we can come up with a reason. I don't think them being a maester being there or not being there has any effect on R plus L equals J. But you got to wonder why Rhaegar wouldn't leave a maester there, but maybe when he left, she was in good shape. He doesn't know that Lyanna's dying. And I think that gives him hope. Rhaegar, going to the Trident, had to have known that he was going to his death. You don't think so?
No. I had once thought that. But with Rhaegar's key conversation with Jaime is in King's Landing, and when I come back, I once thought that too. I thought he was destined to die, but then it's like, and thinking back on it, and I think someone mentioned me on YouTube, and he's right. He said, when I return, we'll call a council, and never mind. It's better not to go on
Rose. Best not talk of Rose, not taken. But
so he knew he thought he was going to win, and Rhaegar did injure Robert.
Robert was just too
much. The Warhammer right there in the heart. Upper body.
Really great stuff, the Tower of Joy. Really, really great stuff. And proving R plus L equals J. There's other points throughout the book that support it, but nothing like the Tower of Joy.
Yeah, that's the big.
What else do you have? Supporting R plus L equals J. You have Daenerys seeing a blue rose.
We know that blue flower represents Lyanna. I don't know the Bale of the Bard story, but in the more current story, the more important part of the story is that the blue rose is a representation of Rhaegar's blue rose that he gave to her at the tournament of Hanrel. Like, he went past his own wife to give to Lyanna.
Mm-hmm.
a lot of little subtle hints of John actually being a king or a prince that also gives mm-hmm. motion that he's legitimate. You know, Robert's line to Ned when he came out to Winterfell, "Oh, Ned, there's so much snow up here you can hide a king." You know, it's little things like that.
Yeah.
The Crips in Winterfell, why is Lyanna in the Crips in Winterfell? She wasn't a lord in Winterfell. There's reasons for it.
Yeah.
And a lot of it in the text, and, you know, anytime you see Ned thinking about Lyanna,
right.
in the next sentence or two or paragraph, he's also thinking about Jon. And in fact, in Ned's last POV,
so we're talking about in the dungeon.
In the dungeon.
When Varys comes to visit him.
Right.
Right.
The last two people he thinks about is Jon and Lyanna.
Yeah.
I mean, that right there, their factor is, why would he be thinking about Dany if Dany was part of that, you know?
He never thinks about Dany.
Only he doesn't want to kill.
That's the one time he really thinks about it.
Right.
He never thinks about her.
He never thinks about
Jon. He's like, I should. You talk to the boy. When I see him again, I'll talk to the
right.
boy.
And that's that last line. He thinks about Lyanna, then he thinks about Jon. And it's funny. I got into an argument one day, and this is one of my famous stories about these people on the internet. And
trolls, man.
Yeah. Trolls. I don't think this one was being trolls. You're just being stupid. She's just being dumb. There's the question about what is Rhaegar's last words. You know, in his last breath, he whispered a woman's name. And this one's opinion was that he whispered Rhaegar's daughter's name, Rhaenys. Which, this time, Rhaenys is what, 3 years old? She's not a woman.
Rhaenys.
Yeah, like, she's not a woman. No. You wouldn't call, and as a father, you wouldn't call your child a woman. No. Doesn't make any sense. I said, yeah, he whispered Lyanna's name because it's known that they fought for Lyanna. That Robert and Rhaegar fought for the woman that they loved.
Right.
Okay? And she's like, no, and if Rhaegar wasn't, you know, thinking about his children, then he could burn in 7 hells. So what I decided to do, is play the angle. I said, well, what about Ned Stark then? So, well, what do you mean? Well, I said, if Rhaegar wasn't thinking about his children, then neither was Ned. The last two people Ned was thinking about his POV was his sister Lyanna and Jon.
Yeah.
And if you're already thinking that, you know, she was already thinking that RLJ, so right. you... John's not, technically, he's not his biological son.
Right.
Meanwhile, he's got Sansa there in King's Landing plus Arya.
Right.
Why is he thinking about them? So shouldn't Eddard then burn in 7 hells for not thinking about his children?
By her estimation.
By her thinking, that's the way it went. And then I think that kind of shut her up because I think, you know, it's like, oh, you can't compare Eddard with Rhaegar. But, he doesn't, in his last thoughts, in his last POV, the last thing he thinks about is Jon.
He also thinks about Rhaegar.
Yeah, when, a little before.
And he says, "Yo, would Rhaegar frequent brothels?" And
yeah. Somehow there's a huge. There's actually a huge paragraph. There's a huge in one of the chapters beforehand that he presents a question in Ned's mind. He just goes through all and all and all, and it really just wraps around like RLJ. It's this huge page full of stuff that just wraps around RLJ
in a Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
A Ned chapter.
Yeah, he talked about Rhaegar. Next thing he's talking about like bastards, and how, you know, and it's all like things that are just like loosely based, and it's like George's way of writing. He's not giving you RLJ in the text. He's running around it, kind of. It's one of the chapters. It's one of the chapters. I think it's in the chapter like right before like Robert is going out and
before he goes hunting?
Yeah. And he just starts like thinking about Rhaegar, and then he starts thinking about Lyanna, and he starts thinking about the bastards of Robert and all that, right. and how like how right. living up a bastard to leave, I mean.
Oh, I see what you're saying, yeah.
So you know what? Little there, little there, little there, right. little there. You see, little,
things that relate to what he's really thinking about.
Yeah.
Right. Explaining, okay. I got you. You should find out which Ned chapter it is, and what we'll do is we'll put it up on Facebook,
mm-hmm.
you know, for anybody that does want to read it. But we're going to take a break now. And we're going to come back and we're going to talk about the debunkers of R plus L equals J, which you would have thought would have kind of just
you thought by now
either been they would manned up and said I'm wrong, or yeah. they would have kind of just climbed back into the woodwork. And
no, they're still finding ways.
But they're still out there, baby. All right, we'll be right back. Bum, 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 bum.